Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. With me, as always, on the other line, it's David Ramil. How you doing, buddy?
A little frustrated, man. A little frustrated with the NBA and the NBA league pass at this point because it's not allowing me the opportunity to be a witness to these wonderful preseason games that we're missing out on.
Yeah, what? That's like the weirdest thing. I mean, the NBA is so forward thinking in everything that they do. I mean, did you see this? The new NFL rule where they said yes. That teams can't put out videos or GIFs or anything of the actual thing that's happening on the field. And the NBA has always been like, no, just go ahead and do that. Like, they just want everybody to see it as much as they want as possible. This seems more like an NFL thing. Like, the NFL would just not have games on TV for some reason.
Even preseason. Yeah, imagine there's some kind of business model that they're trying to follow, or there's some kind of licensing agreement. I can't imagine what it might be. I don't know why they don't include these games, because if they're so open about everybody being able to look, I mean, there's also the blackouts that are happen within a local restricted area and things of that sort. But I mean, I think there's a ways of getting around that. But not to be able to see any preseason games whatsoever just seems ridiculous. I mean, either they're forcing people to watch games just on NBA TV. I'm not sure exactly what the reasons are, but you know what? Basically, that was my way of providing a caveat to all our listeners that despite the fact that we're going to be talking about the Miami Heat loss to the Minnesota Timberwolves on their most recent preseason game, we didn't actually get a chance to see it, unlike most people, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems strange because you watch some of these other preseason games. Right. I don't know if it's an issue of getting like a camera, like a television crew in there to broadcast the game. Maybe that's all it was. It's like a cost cutting move or what. Yeah. But there's 8 preseason games, right? It's not that many. You know, maybe 50% of them are on TV for each team, and if you're lucky. But like, I was watching the Portland Trail Blazers broadcast the other day.
Yeah.
I can't. They were playing the Suns, and Portland was at home, and the only feed that was available to me on League Pass was the Portland home feed. So I couldn't even get the Suns away feed because I'm assuming they didn't have a TV crew there. But it looked like it was just feeding right through their TV, their in-stadium TVs, because we were getting like, I was seeing like the dance cam and everything like that. Like,
oh, that happens normally though. I've seen that before. Actually,
right. Yeah. But it's just like, so it's, I'm wondering, like, just do that for the Heat games. Like they have to, like, when you're in the stadium, maybe they don't, maybe they're just not running anything. Maybe nothing's on the TV when you're there, when you're in the arena, I mean.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's an interesting point. But
I don't know, man. It's weird.
It is a little frustrating though, right? And I think I speak for a lot of people, especially from what we've seen on NBA Twitter. It's a shared malaise everybody's experiencing right now. I think everybody's just looking forward to the upcoming regular season starting already. But you know what? We still have some basketball to talk about, so why don't we just get into it?
All right. Well, the first thing that we definitely want to talk about is Dion Waiters, because I think we all were wondering what kind of role he would play. You and I had assumed or guessed, I guess, that he would be playing six man. That's exactly what's happened through 2 preseason games. Just to run over his stats really quick. Versus Washington in the first preseason game, 22 minutes, 12 points, 8 assists, 1 turnover. And against Minnesota on Saturday, he got 14 points, 6 assists, 7 turnovers, unfortunately, in 27 minutes. So he's really stepped up. I think he's got more assists than Goran Dragic does so far. He's been really impressive. I mean, with the caveat of those 7 turnovers, right?
Sure.
Outside of that, and again, you and I didn't watch the game, so we don't know how those turnovers came about. We don't know if it was completely his fault or if somebody, you know, didn't cut right or whatever. But overall, extremely impressive. Probably,
yeah,
outside of Whiteside, maybe the most impressive player on the team so far.
I think that's a fair assessment. I think, you know, it's the preseason, so that's also something that you have to take into account when you're engaging a player's performance. But I think you know, you and I have talked about Deion so often over the offseason, you know, the dream come true of him actually joining the team and all the number of different narratives, both positive and negative, that seem to follow him throughout, have followed him throughout his career. And I think if you're looking at the general perspective of who he is as a player, it's that he's a ball hog, or he's calling for the ball, or he's going to take it and, you know, miss a layup or do something stupid or corny or whatever. It's just, you know, you always assume when it comes to people and how they think about Deion that they're going to think somewhat negatively about him, or somewhat of a clown maybe. And we're seeing a much better, more effective version of who he's been in the past. And I think that's a big positive step for him. Yeah, certainly as a shot maker, but also a playmaker, a facilitator for the rest of the team. And I think that's a real positive for him, because a lot of people don't know that's a big part of his game. But, you know, I think you and I both got a chance to see it when he was at Oklahoma City last year. And it's always been an underrated aspect of what he can do. And you know, part of it is also the fact that I think he's just maturing, not just, you know, as a player, but as a person. You know, he's finally, he's 24 years old. We forget that he's been playing for the league for, you know, this is his fifth season, but he was fairly young when he came out into college. And now he's finally, you know, growing, changing. And I think he's learned how to accept his role a little bit. I mean, I think he's a valuable part of this team, and I think he can definitely continue contributing as a sixth man. It seems to be the best role for him moving forward.
Yeah, and I think so. 20 or 30 points so far this preseason. Or I'm sorry, 26 points so far this preseason. 10 of 20 shooting, so he's been efficient. Outside of the 7 turnovers, 1 of 3 from 3-point range. So that's not, I guess, you know, 33%, small sample size, but we're probably hoping for more. But again, he's probably handling the ball. Well, he's handling the ball a lot, so his 3-point shots are few and far between, and probably taking some off the dribble in this current role. But it would be nice once Josh Richardson gets back from his MCL sprain, probably have another option to help facilitate, because right now Tyler Johnson's in the starting lineup and Bennett Oudry hasn't been able to play. So it's overall, I think Deion Waiters is showing us everything that we're hoping we could see from him. To me, the most impressive part is the facilitating. That's going to be so important and for this team, especially in certain lineups where Waiters is playing alongside the starters with Goran Dragic, hopefully Josh Richardson, and Deion Waiters, and Justice Winslow, right? And maybe Hassan Whiteside in the middle. And now all of a sudden, because we've seen that Winslow has the ability to facilitate as well. So now you have four ball handlers around Whiteside. To me, that's going to be an extremely explosive lineup. It could very well be Miami's best plus minus lineup this season with the way things are shaking out.
Well, Josh Richardson is expected to be back, you know, at the early start of the season. But if you want to get tickets for any of those Miami Heat games at the American Airlines Arena, we recommend getting SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the best option for you. It's very easy. It's something that I've used in the past. All my friends and family have asked me how to get tickets for the game, and it's the first thing I tell them is to download the SeatGeek app. So easy to use. My mom is not the most tech-savvy person, but when I tell her she wants to get tickets for the upcoming Adele concert or Andrea Bocelli or Julio Iglesias over, you know, playing next year at the American Airlines Arena, I told her, download the SeatGeek app. She asked me, what's an app? I told her how to download it. I told her it's free, easy to use. And next thing you know, she's buying tickets for her favorite concerts and performances. It's so easy to use, and it was just a great experience for her, and I highly recommend it to anybody. When they want to see Heat games, you know, they're playing their first home game, I think, on October 28th against the Charlotte Hornets. When you want to see a repeat of last season's playoff performances, I think this is the best way to do it. The best way to do it is by downloading.
I'm sure the purple shirt guy used SeatGeek to get his courtside seats.
He probably does, just because it's so easy to use. I think it's just it's so easy.
Even somebody as dumb as the purple shirt guy can figure out how to use SeatGeek. That's how easy it is.
That's right. I mean, look, it compares all ticket prices from all these different sources, gives you the best prices available, lets you do all the shopping at just your fingertips there. And again, you just download the app, pick whatever seats you want, and next thing you know, you'll be going to your favorite performances or games. It's just so easy to use. And, you know, for our listeners, there's a particular value there. If you use the code LOHEAT, that's LOHEAT, you get a $20 rebate on your first SeatGeek purchase.
Yeah, I was at a party the other night, and I was just having conversation with some of the local concerts that there's a bunch of really good concerts coming into town in the Oakland area.
Sure.
And we were having a conversation about it, and he's like, yeah, you know, I'm trying to find tickets. And I told him, I was like, hey, you SeatGeek, and I don't want to brag, but I host a podcast that's pretty dope. And we actually have a promo code. And I told the guy, like, in person, I was like, listen to the podcast, but use the promo code LOHEAT, and you can get $20 off. And he's like, really? And I was like, yeah, man. So he's going to be looking for some tickets here pretty soon. We got some good concerts coming in town. So, yeah, the promo code works. It works.
Yeah. Excellent. So, yeah, I mean, that's all you need to know. If you haven't downloaded the app, do so today. Again, it's free, easy to use. And, of course, use the promo code LOHEAT for a $20 rebate on your first ticket purchase.
Yeah, David's grandma can use it. So she's probably got SeatGeek and Candy Crush on her phone now.
Absolutely.
All right, so the power forward situation has been interesting. You know, I think there's a lot of options. They might not be good options, but so far we've seen Luke Babbitt start in the first preseason game. Then James Johnson started in the second half of that preseason game against the Wizards. It's the first preseason game. And then James Johnson got the start in the second preseason game Saturday against the Timberwolves, which I thought was pretty interesting. But it does seem that Eric Spoelstra is playing some mix and match, doing some experimentation, trial and error, whatever, to see who's going to fit alongside the other four guys the best. And I wasn't particularly impressed with James Johnson. It should be noted that Luke Babbitt, in the second preseason game, got a cut in his head that they glued together, I guess.
Yeah.
So well, that's actually a great joke. He's the glue guy. I love it.
Well, it's actually happened to me, too. I was actually playing ball at the University of Miami. Somebody went up for a rebound and came down with an elbow right on the top of my skull, cracked it right down the middle. I didn't even realize, kept playing until everybody was like, holy cow, dude, you're bleeding all over the place. So then I went and got these liquid stitches. I don't know if you've ever used them before, but it sealed it all up and you know, I was okay, so it healed up. I don't think I even have a scar there, so I'm sure Luke Babbitt will be good to go for the following performance.
You don't want to ruin that beautiful face of Luke's.
But yeah, it's an interesting rotation. I mean, we know that Spoelstra is going to be experimenting with his lineup, you know, options there, and I think we've seen that he's trying to figure out where these players fit best, as you pointed out. And I think, you know, obviously Luke Babbitt has established himself as having one and only one asset, and that's perimeter shooting. I mean, all of his field goal attempts against the Minnesota Timberwolves, I think, were from three-point range. He finished 2 of 7, connecting on both of those three-pointers, and you know, all of them were from long range there. Didn't really contribute much else, not much as far as assists or steals or anything along those lines. I think he had 2 rebounds on that game. But, you know, he's clearly shown that he's got one thing that he does very well, and that's three-point shooting, although he struggled a little bit against the Timberwolves. As far as Johnson's concerned, I got to be honest with you, I'm a little disappointed because I don't think he has the athleticism anymore to be a viable option. I'm not sure where he fits in best. Maybe he's just a guy who gets very limited options. In contrast to what we saw from Derek Williams, you know, he's explosive. He's showing a lot more athleticism. He even showed some nice touch from long range there. James Johnson just doesn't have to – he doesn't seem to have anything where he excels at this point. And I'm not sure if it's just as he did last season with Toronto, he just came in out of shape. You know, that might be the case this year, although we did see him perform, you know, or at least participate in offseason workouts led by Udonis Haslam. So you wonder if that's – you know, if he's just out of shape or if maybe he just might be done.
Yeah, man, he's like 29 years old, been in the league for 7 years, and sometimes that's his shelf life. He seems to maybe have primed out 2-3 seasons ago.
Right.
This is his box score against Washington in the first game wasn't bad. 7.7 rebounds on 60% shooting, which mostly just came around the rim. Even though he did miss 1 3-point shot that he attempted, but
7 rebounds, too, in that game, so...
Yeah, exactly. So that was an... Like, if you can get a contribution from him like that without taking 5 shots, that would be good, right? Like, if he maybe took 3 shots, got 7 points, 7 rebounds, or whatever. But he's missing free throws. I'm with you, man. I'm not that impressed. That might be the last time we see James Johnson starting. I like Luke Babbitt more. I understand that he got his head knocked open. Derek Williams, to me, like you just said, he had a great game. I mean, I've been trying to get Derek Williams. I like Derek Williams as a potential starting four, but the more I've been thinking about it, I don't know if any, like, Derek Williams had one of those games, right? He just had one of those games that we were talking to Jared Dubin, who runs Locked On Knicks, and we asked him about Derek Williams, and he said he's going to have games like that against Minnesota, 14 points on 5 of 10 shooting, 2 of 5 from 3-point range, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals, and a block in 27 minutes. I'm like, he just filled up the box score.
Sure.
But that's what he said. He's going to have games like that, and then he's going to have games like James Johnson, you know, where he just doesn't really do anything and he's completely inefficient. And if that's the case, then I don't know if you can rely on him as a starter. I'm with you. I've come around. I like Luke Babbitt in the starting lineup just because I like his position as a 3-point shooter who could stretch the floor from the power forward spot, and you have enough defense on that team to maybe make up for it. I mean, we talked about it. He's had a positive plus minus, you know, this preseason. Right. So, but at the same time, if you want your best five, why not just move Justice Winslow to the four?
And then start who at the three then?
Well, then we're waiting for Richardson to come back, and I think you start Richardson.
Yeah, theoretically.
And Deion Waiters.
Oh, well, that might be interesting, but then that kind of leaves the bench somewhat exposed. And as we saw against Minnesota, our bench needs help. You know, we're down a couple of players at this point, and, you know, everybody started, not everybody played last night. But I'm not sure that you want to continue to go that, you know, if you want to start that potent on an offense, and I think that has some potential to be a potent offense and a really, you know, good defense as well, obviously, because Waiters is a plus defender, Richardson, obviously, and, you know, Winslow, and of course, Whiteside, all those guys are a plus defensive team there. And I think they're capable of scoring somewhat. So, but there's, you know, there's a lack of 3-point shooting, perhaps, although you expect Richardson to be able to maintain some of his production from long range last season. It's an interesting option, but I think I'm kind of sold on having, you know, Deion come off the bench, and maybe you can mix and match a little bit. I mean,
well,
you want to develop
some
consistency.
Because if you start all those guys, you can work your rotations to the point where you always have one of Dragic or Waiters and Richardson on the floor at a time. I mean, you can stagger the minutes that way. And then you still have Tyler Johnson coming off the bench, which we all agree that's his best position. We don't think he's going to be the starter. We think Josh Richardson will be the starter when he comes back. And then you still have, and the reason I've been thinking about this, I like Luke Babbitt, but I think Luke Babbitt, if he could play up to how he's been playing, how he played in that first game, or just kind of, you know, we've been generally impressed overall through two games. You put him next to Willie Reed on the reserve unit, and now all of a sudden that opens up the floor for Willie Reed, because my only issue with Willie Reed is he's so limited in what he can do offensively that he kills the spacing. I mean, even more so than what Whiteside can do. Whiteside will at least show off a jumper every once in a while, and Willie Reed's not going to do that. So I like Luke Babbitt and Willie Reed as a front court for the reserve unit. And then just having, you know, one of Tyler, you add Tyler Johnson to one of Waiters or Richardson or Dragic and stagger the minutes that way after the starting lineup comes out. And I don't know, man, like maybe that works. I just, the four spot right now is so dry that I don't know that you can afford to, I don't know if that the Heat can trust either Derek Williams, Luke Babbitt, or James Johnson for 82 straight games. And now I worry that they're going to get out to early deficits, and then you all of a sudden you have to rely on this offense, which is not going to be the strength of this team, I don't think, to try to get back into these games. I don't know, man. I think you just got to start your best five and then just figure out where you can get points from the bench later. I don't know.
I think I kind of tend to disagree on that. I think Babbitt gives you a good option early on to help space the floor, and again, as you pointed out, I think the defense of the other starters, you know, if we presume that Richardson is reinserted in the starting lineup, I think that's strong enough to mask whatever deficiencies he has. I think he's not necessarily a really, really bad defender. He just isn't necessarily as alert and aware, and he's, you know, not quite physically imposing enough to stop the best power forwards. And maybe it's something that's dictated on matchups. I think, you know, Spoelstra in the past hasn't necessarily been willing to, you know, change his lineups around, but maybe he has to this season because he doesn't have a clear, you know, superstar to play at the four. You know, I think maybe, you know, you can bring Deion Waiters later on to close out games, as he did, you know, when he was Oklahoma City. He was a big part of that. They had Westbrook. You know, they'd have Durant. They even have Kanter at some points, or Steven Adams. I mean, there was there were options there that they could, you know, use, and Waiters was one of them. And, you know, he was a strong plus defender. So I think if you start Babbitt at the power forward position and then to close out games, you can bring Waiters off the bench and slide Winslow over and then go to that more potent defensive lineup. I think that gives you a better option. But I think at this point, you're going to need some perimeter shooting. And, you know, neither Derek Williams or James Johnson or Winslow at this point, I think, are consistent enough from long range to be counted on as a quality starter.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I'm with either Babbitt or Winslow starting at the four. I like
that. I mean, it's interesting. And, you know, maybe we'll see that. I mean, it's too bad that Richardson's out and that we don't get to see that as a potential lineup option, because I think that's, you know, that's certainly an intriguing one. You know, if you're looking at all the different pieces and how they fit together, that would be a pretty good one. But I'm also scared, like I said, about, you know, the lack of depth there.
Yeah.
Who's going to step up for the second unit there? And if you're bringing Babbitt off the bench, I think he's going to get exposed pretty badly. And that's where you're going to see those kind of deficits really start to take place. And if let's say you start that good, strong starting unit there, and all of a sudden you build up a 10-point lead, and then you bring in a guy like Derek Williams and maybe just put play at the three, and you bring in Luke Babbitt, and then you've got some other rotations taking place there, but all of a sudden you've got this really weak defensive unit there, and all of a sudden that lead evaporates, then you're asking the guys that started to come back in there and help establish it again. And I just don't know that that's necessarily a strong suit for them.
Yeah, and having Deion Waiters coming off the bench to help generate offense is important too.
It is.
All right, let's open up the mailbag. Let's get into that. So our first question comes from Chris Leach. Why did Udonis Haslem get more playing time than Willie Reed in the first game? Is this going to be normal going forward? We didn't see that in the second game. This question got to us after the first game, before the second game. But it was certainly interesting in that first box score, because I don't think we expected that. I don't know what the reason was. Maybe Willie Reed tweaked something. Maybe they were just trying to get Haslem some run in the first preseason game. I don't think, though, it's going to be... That's not something we're going to see going forward. Willie Reed's the reserve center. Haslem was going to get minutes here and there, but Willie Reed is going to be the main reserve center. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, it's preseason. You know, everything has to be viewed through that lens. As much as we want to take certain things as positive, there are guys that aren't starting who are superstars. You know, Al Horford didn't start yesterday for Boston. You know, Serge Ibaka sat out for Orlando, et cetera. There are guys that are not playing who are going to be in there and be surefire all-stars. So we can't take too much for, you know, or at face value there. So Udonis's playing time, as much as we'd like to see him be out there and contributing, it doesn't seem very likely. And I think Willie Reed is the guy moving forward. So it's a good question, but I don't think that that's going to be the norm. And I think it's just a matter of him getting out there, getting a little experience just to see, you know, that he can still play at a fairly good, you know, high level. And, you know, he's Udonis. You know what you're going to get from him. You just want to make sure that he's still out there and able to perform at that level, that he's not washed completely. And that he still has something to contribute to the team as far as his on-the-court performance.
Yeah, we know that once we get to the playoffs, he'll come in when we need him, and he'll hit a nice 15-footer baseline jumper, and it'll all be worth it. Right. All right, next question. This is from Brian Young. So he's got a question about Chris Bosh's blood clot. So this last blood clot that reportedly had him fail his most recent physical at the team, he's wondering if this is just another bout of blood clots, or if this is something Bosch is going to have to deal with forever, and if it even matters as far as what the Heat do. And I think that the Heat have made their decision on it. I think that they've seen enough. I think three blood clots, or however many it's been now, it's been enough, and they've seen enough. So in that way, it doesn't really matter what happens now. As far as what the team does with Bosch, as far as Bosch, I think this is something that he's going to have to live with forever. I imagine he's going to get checkups routinely to make sure everything's flowing right. But it does sound like, unfortunately for Chris, it's going to be something that he has to deal with.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people look at the possibility of him taking blood thinners. And, you know, we've forgotten that Udonis Haslem had to deal with clots at one point early in his career, and he had to deal with blood thinners. I got a chance to talk to Jeff Green in Orlando, and he had a heart problem that kept him out for a full season, and he had to deal with blood thinners. I mean, it's not something that's, you know, unheard of in NBA circles. It's just a matter of blood clots continuing to occur and for Chris Bosh, and that's the unfortunate aspect. Now, we don't want to speak too much about the medical aspect, not either of us being doctors, unless something's changed in your resume that I'm not aware of.
Nope.
Still not a doctor? Okay,
no, let's move forward. I won't even watch him on TV.
Okay, good. In that case, then, I think, you know, I think the second part of that question about whether or not it matters is a more important one to address. And, you know, I think they're trying to do what's best for the player. I think they think that he's just not going to be a viable option because he's going to continue to develop these sorts of things. And if that's the case, he's not necessarily going to be able to contribute. You're paying him a lot of money. You don't necessarily want to do that anymore. You're maybe there's an altruistic reason in trying to protect his livelihood and his life, if that's a possibility. And you know, you just want to try and get some stability moving forward. You either want him out there healthy, knowing that you're going to be able to count on him, or I think you'd rather just have a clean break. And we'll see what happens. I mean, Chris might you know, reappear for another team down the line. Maybe somebody's willing to take a chance, but that's up to them. I think, as you pointed out, his Heat career is done. And that's, you know, we've talked about it on a number of occasions. Go back and listen to some of our previous podcasts, right, when we got the news directly from Pat Riley and when he first notified everybody that his Heat career was over. We talked about it extensively, so it's worth listening to even now.
All right, and this is our final question. This is from Theodore Stevens. He asked, do you see the Heat going after somebody like Kenneth Faried, who looks like he might be out in Denver, instead of waiting until free agency? If so, would you think that kind of power forward would work next to Hassan Whiteside? That kind of power forward being Faried. I think, just like we saw with the Goran Dragic deal, you can't rule anything out. As we just discussed, there's a hole at the power forward position, right? If you're relying on that trio of Derek Williams with Babbitt and James Johnson, you're just, one thing you're going to be missing is consistency, right? You just don't know what you're getting from those guys on a game-to-game basis. And that's what's plagued those three guys for their careers, essentially. If you can get the best version of those guys, if Luke Babbitt can step up and be the best version of Luke Babbitt, I don't think that you necessarily need to make a deal. Same thing with Derek Williams. I don't think you need to make a deal. But if it's getting towards the trade deadline and Denver looks to be shopping Kenneth Faried, my one issue with Faried is his contract. I don't like it. I don't like the value there. But as far as a fit, I don't even know if I like his fit. He's a tough rebounder. You know, he's one of those old school guys. He can rebound the ball and push it up the floor. That would fit. But he's not an outside shooter. He's not necessarily a versatile scorer. So I think that's what you're, if the way the Heat are going forward, I think you need more of a floor spacer next to Whiteside.
Yeah, I agree 100% there. I've never been really – I've kind of always had like a mixed opinion of Faried. I think a lot of people do. I love his effort. I love his hustle and the fact that he's always, you know, kind of dives to the rim with reckless abandon, even for a guy that's somewhat undersized there. But at the same time, you can't ignore how his performance with Team USA a couple of years ago somehow turned into this huge contract offer from Denver when they had, I think – a different front office in place there. So I think they've kind of saddled this current version of the team with that contract. And I don't know that he's ever going to be able to live up to it. You know, we talked a couple months ago about the impact of Joe Johnson and his lasting legacy, you know, being tied together, that huge deal, how unfortunate that was, because obviously he was still a productive player. He was still an all-star, et cetera, but he's just one guy who, you know, because of his production, never could live up to that contract. And I think it's the same thing with Faried. Great hustle guy. Always going to go in there for a rebound, but he's not necessarily a good on-ball defender. In fact, he's pretty poor at times.
Yeah, you put him next to like a Chris Bosh, you know, at center. Somebody that's not – if Faried's strength is rebounding the ball and getting tough buckets around the rim. If you can – if you put him next to a stretch five, that makes more sense. Somebody that doesn't – that's going to be facing up maybe away from the rim. That makes more sense to me, but not that. That does lead us to a good question – another – what kind of – guy does fit along Hassan Whiteside. I think back to those Dwight Howard Magic teams. You get like a Rashard Lewis or a Hedo Turkoglu type who could play that stretch four, handle the ball a little bit, move around the floor. That to me is the guy that you want next to Chris Bosh. To Hassan Whiteside, sorry.
We did have one, right? A guy by the name of Chris Bosh.
And during the big three we had, you know, Shane Battier and Rashard Lewis for a hot minute there. I think a guy like that would make sense.
So are there options there? Is there anybody, you know, it's probably something we might want to address in a future podcast.
Wilson Chandler, Denver Nuggets. If the Nuggets decide that they want to part ways with Wilson Chandler, that could fit.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's been linked to trades in the past there, but I think they're pretty high on him. I think Michael Malone likes what he brings to the table. I think he's a part of their team moving forward. So I'm not sure they're willing to trade for him. And then, you know, that always brings up the option for Miami. What do you have to deal? I mean, who are you going to move? Are they going to take Tyler Johnson off our hands there? I don't think that's the case. And I don't know what else we have to offer for a guy like Chandler.
Yeah, it might be a situation where they're waiting for free agency. But what I think is clear, though, is that I don't know if they have their long-term answer at power forward right now. This might be a situation where you have to draft your power forward.
Or they might look ahead to, you know, getting a guy like Blake Griffin, you know, as a potential free agent option next year.
Right. Well, that's all we got for today. We're going to be recapping the games this week that happen. And if we're not recapping, then we're previewing. So be sure to check those out. And if you haven't listened to our recap of the first game against the Wizards, then go back and listen to that, because we're really excited for these recaps. I mean, I think that's going to be something that, I mean, our plan is to do them after every weeknight game, right?
Yeah.
So we're not going to get on after a Saturday night game, but we'll get on, or a Friday night game, but we're going to get on for every game that happens over the weeknight. We'll continue to do our mailbags on Mondays, so keep sending those questions over. But I think the recaps especially is something that we're going to offer that I don't know you can really, the in-depth analysis of every game, I'm not sure you're going to be able to get that anywhere else. Any other podcast or radio program, right?
That's right. Yeah, I mean, it's not just an instant reaction, but it's also breaking it down, seeing what trends develop over the course of the season. And I think that's something that you're not going to find anywhere else, as you pointed out. And I think that's, you know, because of our knowledge, because of our level of access, et cetera, I think it's a high-quality product. And, you know, we're looking forward to continuing to bring this. You know, this is our first season on Locked On Heat, you know, with me providing this kind of daily access. So it's exciting for us, and hopefully it's just as exciting for our listeners.
Well, that's all we have for today. And whether you're listening on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher, thank you for listening. Get in touch with the show on Twitter at Locked On Heat. Give us a follow there. Or by email, where you can send us mailbag questions, comments, inquire about sponsorship opportunities, if that's what floats your boat. That's LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. Big thanks to SeatGeek for sponsoring the show. Remember to use that promo code LOHEAT to get $20 off of your very first SeatGeek purchase. And big thanks to David, as always, for joining me.
You got it, Wes.
We'll catch you next time.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.